At a time when investors are confronted with market volatility and a variety of challenges fueled by the uncertainty of inflation, unsettled geopolitical tensions, and economic pressures, Luke Guerrero stands ready to take your finance and investment questions and share his unbiased answers. InvestTalk is made possible by KPP Financial, a registered investment advisor firm serving clients throughout the United States. The clarity for your path forward starts now. Here is KPP Financial Portfolio Manager, Luke Guerrero.
Good afternoon, fellow investors, and welcome back to InvestTalk. My name is Luke Guerrero, and today is Friday, May 24th, 2024, which means we almost made it to another weekend. And this weekend is pretty special for hopefully most of you. You'll get some relaxing time by yourselves or with your families over the next 3 days. But before we head off into really what is the last trading week of May, I can't believe the first half of the year is almost over, we have some work to do. Because we come here every day with one mission, and that is to leave a better and more informed investor. Now, to accomplish that, we have a mix of things that I want to talk about, some stories that I've read throughout the day, or some things that I believe are interesting and you should know about. But more importantly, we hope to hear from you over this next hour, because you are what matters and you drive this conversation forward. Now, with that being said, we'll talk about today's market performance and what happened during the week, as well as run down the show topics right after we tackle our first caller question now.
Hey, this is James from Georgia. Just trying to call you guys about Lincoln Electric Holdings Incorporated. It really did come down today. Just trying to find out what's going on with the company. If you could please tell me the fundamentals, and is this a good time to perhaps buy some more of it? Ticker symbol is LECO. I appreciate all you do. Thank you.
Lincoln Electric Holdings, ticker LECO, is a manufacturer of welding equipment and welding systems for various clientele, not just in the U.S., but internationally as well. So taking a look at its fundamentals, it looks like it has modest amount of debt, $1.16 billion on an $11 billion market cap company. It pays a dividend of 1.38%, and that dividend's been pretty consistent between 1% and 2% over the past 5 years. Now, its sales have kind of dropped off in the past couple years. It has a five-year annualized rate of just about 7%, but it's barely been growing. And so with the elevated relative valuation of 21.5 still in terms of forward-looking price to earnings, it's a little expensive for what you're getting in terms of growth. And analysts tend to agree. It looks like it has a consensus hold rating at the moment. And that's because over the past month or so, they have been downgrading the forward-looking guidance, or rather the forward earnings estimates on the analyst side. And so even with those downgrades, you're still looking at a price to earnings that is actually probably a little bit more than what the overall market is trading at right now. So just given the dynamics of that, actually, I want to look at, before we make a decision here, geographically, how's this revenue breakdown? So it looks like 60%-ish comes to the United States and 10% comes from China. So given what is going on within the Chinese property market and building, I would expect that the revenue not be growing as much as it has over the past 5 years, certainly within at least the past 18 to 24 months. So, you know, given the current downgrades, the consensus hold rating, even though cash flow is improving and profitability has been pretty stable, it looks to me that the company is going through a little bit of a pullback. It still has an elevated relative valuation. I would keep it on my watch list because it is a good business. It is a consistently run business with a little debt and relatively strong fundamentals, but I don't think now is a time to enter. But thanks for the call. Now, we got a lot of ground to cover in the next 45 minutes or so, so here's some of what we have planned for you, time permitting. My main focus point concerns this question. When focusing on yield, investors are urged to proceed with caution. Investors selecting funds based on dividend yield should be aware that high yield is no assurance of higher expected return. Now, in order to understand this, we'll talk about investor behavior, what it means to be a high-yielding stock, and how dividend investing should play a role, but not the only role, within your portfolio. We will also be talking a little bit about, what are we talking about today? Oh, Some big news coming out of the SEC about how markets are working happened several months ago, and now it is being implemented. And that is a change in how securities settle from T plus two, meaning 2 days after they're traded, to T plus one. So what are the implications for market participants? What are the implications for you? Is it good for the overall system? Because that starts next week. Secondly, we'll talk about the demographic shifts across the globe. If you recall, 40 years ago, I wasn't born yet, but so I've heard. 40 years ago, the big concern was overpopulation, especially in East Asia. Now the tides have turned, and the biggest concern seems to be demographic slowdown, an aging population. So what are some things that governments have been doing, and what are some things that governments can do going forward, and how might that affect the overall economic outlook over the next several decades? And should we have time at the end of the show, we'll talk a bit about a lawsuit that is near and dear to my heart, and that is the DOJ announced that they will be suing Live Nation, specifically their Ticketmaster unit, and they will seek to not only get billions of dollars in settlements for overusing their power in a monopolistic way, but they also want to break up the company. We also have some questions that came into our voice bank ready to play, including one on 403B plan fees and one on Etsy. I also have some questions that came in from the comment section of the InvestTalk YouTube channel. And since it's Friday, we'll squeeze in excerpts from the newest KPP premium newsletter. And of course, I welcome your finance and investment questions now or anytime throughout the show on 888-99-CHART. Now we're going into a short break, and on the other side, we'll talk about today's market activity, as well as how the market fared this week, and take your questions on the InvestTalk Anytime listener line at 888-99-CHART.
InvestTalk callers make each podcast unique.
I was calling about Intel. If it's worth holding on to, or should I sell it?
Their questions are curious.
I have saved up around $80,000, and I was wondering what I should do to make it grow.
Careful.
So I'm just wondering, is this a value trap? Because it looks like it's gone down quite a bit.
Concerned.
It's taken quite the tumble today. I've been trying to get out of this position for a while. I think I waited too long.
And clever.
Looking at Dominion Energy, Inc., does seem to be situated in some areas of expanding population.
And Justin Klein and now Luke Guerrero are always ready with their unbiased answers.
And this is, it looks like a classic example of chasing yield. Don't chase the yield.
Next 12 months price to earnings is around 30. I just don't see it at this price.
Don't forget to call InvestTalk 888-99-CHART. Got finance and investment questions. And Luke Guerrero is here taking your calls live. InvestTalk, 888-99-CHART.
Let's talk about the market today. And it was a positive day overall, though there was some divergence across indices. The S&P 500 up 70 basis points, while small caps were up over 1%. The NASDAQ, very powerful today, 110 basis point performance, yet the Dow only up 1 basis point, 0.01%. And so that came off of the heels of some pressure from yesterday. The NASDAQ and the S&P locked in their fifth consecutive week of gains, with big tech being mostly higher and other outperformers including semis, auto parts, retail, underperformers, software names, some managed care, pharma, airlines. Treasuries were mixed with the curve generally flattening overall, and it looks like crude oil settled up 1.1% today. Overall, I'd say there's nothing really specific behind the market bounce, though rate stabilization and AI being a secular growth theme seem to have been held, especially in the wake of NVIDIA's earnings that came earlier in the week. It was a good day for some retail names, given that retail earnings were pretty positive overall, and momentum still seems to be a pretty good trade. Now, looking at the week as a whole, on the bullish side, as I mentioned, NVIDIA delivered some meaningful beats and rises against a pretty high bar, especially given where revenue has been over the past couple months and where guidance has been over the past couple months. They weren't the only tech name that had a good week. Microsoft was another bright spot with positive takeaways from their Build conference. On the economic front, flash PMIs came in higher than expected, and there were lower initial claims than expected. On the bearish side of things, the market priced in less than 40 basis points now of rate cuts for 2024, following that firmer flash PMI data that I mentioned. FOMC minutes also came in this week, and they were hawkish. Now, given they were coming in before and the discussion was before the most recent CPI and PPI prints, but still, they said that various participants flagged a willingness to tighten policy if they need to. Waller specifically saying that he needs to see not just one more month, but several more months of good inflation data before getting enough comfort on cooling trends to ease. And with that being said, Goldman Sachs pushed out its timing of the first rate cut from July to September, following all of that data and Fed speak as well. Looking ahead to next week, we have consumer confidence on Tuesday. We have PCE, which is the Fed's preferred measure of inflation, on Friday. And just like that, May will be over, and we will have just one more month left in the first half of 2024. Now, on Fridays, we generally make time to fit in a quick rundown of key benchmark numbers, so let me hit you with that list right now. The two-year Treasury yield was at 4.95% today. For perspective, 2 weeks ago, it was at 4.86. 14 weeks ago, it was at 4.66. 113 weeks ago, that number was 1.961. The 10-year Treasury yield was at 4.469%. 2 weeks back, that number was 4.502. 28 weeks back, it was 4.63. And 123 weeks ago, it was 1.762%. Gold, the shiny metal, was priced at $2,333 per ounce. 10 weeks back, it was $2,156. 28 weeks back, that number was $1,935. And 117 weeks ago, $1,806. Silver, the metal that is more used for industrial purposes, but still precious, was at $30.32 per ounce. 10 weeks back, it was $25.18. 82 weeks back, that number was $19.15. And 110 weeks ago, $23.94. Oil was selling for $77.81 a barrel today. 5 weeks back, that was $83.10. 32 weeks ago, $87.44. And 123 weeks ago, that number was all the way down to $66.62. The national average for a gallon of regular gasoline is $3.60 per gallon. 10 weeks back, that was $3.43. 51 weeks ago, it was $3.56. And 119 weeks ago, that was $3.57. In the state of California, my home state, it was averaging $5.13 per gallon. 9 weeks back, that was $4.88. 30 weeks ago, that was $5.32. And 106 weeks ago, it was $5.87. For comparison, in the beautiful state of North Carolina today, gas was averaging $3.35 per gallon. That is $1.78 less than gas is in the state of California. Now let's go to another caller question now that came in earlier at 888-99-CHART.
Good morning, gentlemen. This is Brett from New Jersey. I'm calling about my 403B plan, a plan that was provided for me as a teacher here in New Jersey. I'm with a company called Equitable. They have been, you know, with me since I started teaching. I found out that my fees are 2.34% annually. And I'm just wondering what you thought of that. Is that normal for a 403B plan? I'm considering shopping around. Do I just, you know, do some research, find out everyone else's fees and their performance and make a decision based off that? Or is 2.34 good? Interested to hear what you think about this. All right. Thank you very much. Bye-bye.
So first, for those who don't know, a 403B plan is similar to a 401k plan, but it typically is provided by nonprofits, or in this case, teachers. Now, I had to pause for a second to see if I heard you correctly, because I didn't think that the fees would be as high as 2.34% per year. That is incredibly expensive. And the power of compounding works both ways, because returns compound over time. The more time you're in the market, the more beneficial, the more chance you have of having higher expected returns. That's true. But also, the higher fees you pay, the more that's being left on the table, the more that's being taken by whoever is managing, running, advising this plan. Now, there could be a whole bunch of reasons why the fees are high, because the fees typically include investment management fees, advisory fees, administrative fees, could even be individual service fees. So first and foremost, I would ask why you are paying 2.34% per year. Because on average, you should expect to pay 50 basis points to 1.5% for a 403B plan. That's the national average. So to your question, should you be shopping around? Probably. But first, I would ask your plan administrator, what am I paying for? Because unless you're paying for some stellar management, which I don't think you are, I think you're paying for the plan. That seems overly expensive, and there have to be better options out there where you are not losing the return that you should be earning. Thanks for the call. Now, as we go to a quick break, I want to remind you that we are preparing a new InvestTalk Wealth webinar, which will be hosted by myself and Justin. The official title is Quality Investing, Digging Deeper Than Dividends. It all happens online Tuesday, June 11th from 1 to 2 p.m. Pacific. So go to investtalk.com now to register for our upcoming wealth webinar. As all of our webinars are, it is free to attend, but you must pre-register. And now, as we're heading into a break, my phone lines are open and waiting for you to call. 888-99-CHART.
Every investor is working to build a secure financial future. How they get there and when they get there, that depends on many variables. The more you learn about how the market works, the better your chances. So don't forget to call InvestTalk, 888-99-CHART.
Looks like we have a live caller question about Intuit from Sammy in San Francisco. Do you own it or are you looking to buy it?
Thanks for taking my call. Yeah, I'm looking to buy it. What do you think is a good entry point?
Yeah, so, you know, this is an interesting situation here. Intuit was down 8% today. And that was coming off of good earnings with some decent guidance. But I think the primary driver of this is something which in the long term could hurt this company. And that is that they have lost 1 million free users this tax season. And there is currently an initiative in the IRS to do what most other countries on this planet do, which is provide free tax filing. Filing taxes is an interesting thing to me, always has been, because the government knows exactly how much you owe, and then you have to pay somebody to figure that number out, and then you tell them, and they either say, hey, you got it right, or they say, no, pay a penalty, go to jail. So I think one thing that's hurting Intuit going forward is that 30% of the revenue is derived by from TurboTax. And should the IRS move more quickly than they likely will, it's still a couple years away, that could certainly eat into their long-term revenue. Now, looking at it today, it's pretty expensive. It's trading at a forward-looking price to earnings of 35. Its price to book is about 10. And so with, again, 30% of its revenue being potentially hurt by government changes, I don't know if it's a good long-term investment. If you're looking for the support here, it's going to be closer to probably around 550. I just think it's too expensive, especially given secularly what's going on from a regulatory perspective. Buying something that has okay revenue growth that should taper off over the next couple years at a 35 times multiple just doesn't seem like good sense to me. But thanks for the call. Let's go to Robert now from Pleasanton, who has a question about BMY. Do you own it or are you looking to buy it?
I am looking to buy it, possibly. I was taking a look at it today, and just seeing how far it's fallen, it's really been on a bad run. I'm just wondering if you think now is the time to jump in, or do you think it has farther to go? It's obviously, you know, a big company that you have to think is probably going to survive, but, really beat up on the stock price.
No, it certainly is beat up on the stock price. So BMY, Bristol Myers Squibb, is a pharmaceutical company. So they sell, manufacture biopharmaceutical products, especially within small molecule products. So taking a look at this company over the past 52 weeks, it's down 37%. Year to date, down 20%. 3 months, down 20%. Its sales growth has been pretty stagnant, actually, over the past couple years. Because if you look at it, it looks great on the top line. 5-year annualized growth rate, 15%. Most of that was between 2019 and 2020. Since then, flatlined. Cash flow, fallen. Profitability, falling off. They pay a dividend right now. It's at 5.78%. That's not sustainable, really. Especially if they can't raise revenues and they can't continue to keep their profit margins high. Their profit margin, their net margin this year is supposed to be 2.4%. It's a consensus hold rating for a reason. I think it probably still has more to fall. Just because a company's big and has been around doesn't mean it'll continue to exist. Do I think this company is going to go bankrupt? Probably not. The market signals that in a different way. But big companies fall. Big companies can become small companies. And this one's at least heading towards becoming a mid-sized company. Thanks for the call. Now let's talk a little bit about my main focus point today, which concerns this story. When focusing on yield, investors are urged to proceed with caution. Investors selecting funds based on dividend yield should be aware that high yield is no assurance of higher expected returns. So let's talk a little bit about investor behavior and dividend investing broadly. And so, you know, there's a common misconception among investors that the allure of high dividend yields. And it's easy to assume that a high yield is a beacon for higher expected returns. After all, they're giving you money. We all love money. But that's not the full story. And so Dimensional Fund Advisors, my old employer, looked at the data and specifically the 10-year annualized returns against average dividend yield for U.S. large cap equity funds. And what they found is that there is no meaningful relationship between high yields and higher returns. In fact, many of the best performing funds actually featured below average yields. So how should we be thinking about this? Well, it's important to consider that there's more to investing than dividends. There's what we call total return from stocks, which encompasses both capital appreciation and the dividends you received. It's that holding period return that is the difference between what you bought it for and what you sell it for, plus the cash you got along the way. So if you focus only on dividends, you're missing half in terms of one out of two of the return, but really more than half, because most of your stock return is likely to be in capital appreciation over time, especially within the small and the mid-cap space. And missing half the picture potentially limits your portfolio participation. So we'll talk a little bit more about this after the break, and I think it's very appropriate considering what our next wealth webinar is about. I also want to remind you that Monday is a market holiday, so we put together a fresh compilation show. We call it a Best of Caller Questions podcast. Look for that to be posted on InvestTalk.com and other platforms, and remember that InvestTalk downloads are always free. Now, as we head into this break, feel free to give us a call. You know the number, it's 888-99-CHART.
When it comes to ensuring your company has top-notch security practices, things can get complicated fast. Vanta automates compliance for ISO 27001, SOC 2, GDPR, and more, saving you time and money. With Vanta, you can unify your security program management with a built-in risk register and reporting, and proactively manage security reviews with AI-powered security questionnaires. Over 7,000 global companies like Atlassian, Flow Health, and Quora use Vanta to build trust and prove security in real time. Learn more at vanta.com/go. That's vanta.com/go.
The more you learn about how the market works, the better your chances for success. So don't forget to call InvestTalk, 888-99-CHART.
Now, before we headed into the break, we were talking about our main focus point today, which is about dividend investing. And so I mentioned that people need to think about investing in terms of total stock return because, generally speaking, dividends only contribute about 35% of a stock's total return. So if you are seeking dividends and not thinking about the company that you're holding, you could be not only eliminating necessary diversification, but you could also be missing out on the main component of return. So the question becomes, why do high dividend yield stocks capture our attention? Frankly, it's investor behavior. They promise these attractive yields. It's easy to understand when somebody tells you they will pay you a 2% yield on a regular basis, or a 5% or a 7%, that in your mind you understand what your return is going to be. But let's think about this. So if a company's stock has been pummeled, due to financial troubles, the dividend yield might increase as a result. It doesn't mean the company's a wise investment, because it means the company might also struggle to pay that dividend. So if a company is trading at $25 and paid a $2.50 annual dividend, which is a 5% yield, and some sort of shock caused its price to fall in half, well, guess what? On paper, that yield's now 10%. That might look super appealing, but it also could be temporary. So what else should you be looking for? You should be looking at the company's free cash flow and its dividend payout ratios, historical dividend yields, historical dividend records, its ability to pay that dividend through different market circumstances. Reliable dividend payers often have strong fundamentals and a steady history of revenue and income growth. And that's just some of the things you should be looking for. As I mentioned before, Justin and I will be doing an entire webinar on June 11th about how dividend investing can be a part of your portfolio, but it shouldn't be the only part of your portfolio. Beyond the company itself, you must also consider the impact of, especially now, rising interest rates on dividend stocks. In an environment where the Federal Reserve raises rates, dividends become less attractive compared to safer, risk-free government securities. If interest rates rise significantly, a previously attractive dividend might no longer lure investors as it once did. And so while high dividends can be appealing, they can also be fool's gold. Always perform diligent research and consider the broader economic context of an investment, because it's more important what you're holding rather than how much of a dividend it pays. Now, I hope you've been telling your friends and your family members that our Invest Talk audio podcast is also now in video form on our YouTube channel. It seems like every day now we receive finance and investment questions from the comment section of our Invest Talk YouTube channel, and we like to get to those as soon as they come in. So here's one that came in recently on CW. It says, I've been wanting to buy Curtis Wright stock for a 3 to 5 year holding period. It looks solid and profitable to me, but maybe a little rich now. What entry point would you suggest? Or should I dollar cost average gradually? So let's pull up CW, which is Curtis Wright. And it is an aerospace and defense company that's gotten a particular boon recently because they do a lot of nuclear reactor work, and there is a steady demand for a transition away from fossil fuels into more renewable energy. And so in Q1 2024, they had pretty strong earnings and sales growth and margin expansion, and their sales and profits from their defense electronics section more than doubled. Not only that, they increased 2024 guidance and expect a 5 to 7% revenue growth and higher margins going forward. Taking a look at their debt, they have $1.2 billion in debt on a $10 billion market cap company, and they've been buying back shares over the past 5 years. Their earnings have been upgraded. Their cash flow has been improving. Their profitability is steady and improving. Their sales growth has a little less to be desired, but within this particular industry, that's to be expected. Again, their long-term debt, not a problem. Their operating cash flow looks pretty good, pretty darn good. Return on assets, return on equity, all this looks great. But again, it's not just about owning good businesses. Your entries and exits matter. Their momentum is strong. There's no way around that. Over the past year, they've returned 74%, 26% alone this year. But they're pretty expensive, as the commenter noted. Forward-looking price earnings, 26. Price to book, 4.5. This could be a situation where, given the craze of transition, or rather the craze surrounding the desire to transition, and the power that, what role nuclear power plays within a holistic approach to independent energy, that could lead companies like this to be, frankly, a little overvalued. So this is a good company. I would certainly keep it on my watch list. Let's take a look at where we might want to buy this thing. This comes back down to the 240 range, 240 to 250. That's probably where I would be looking to enter. Right now, it looks like it's trying to find some resistance before it establishes some support. So I would hold off. Dollar cost averaging, always a good idea. You can lower your entry point over time, but still, this number is on a surge right now. It's a little expensive. I'd keep it on my watch list for now. Thanks for watching. Now, this is InvestTalk now with more than 58 million downloads, and let's go ahead and play another listener question now.
Hey, you guys. It's Art from Tucson here. Today I'm calling in about Visteon Corp. VC is a ticker. It's in a bearish trend right now, long-term bearish trend. I own it. I'm down about 20% on it, but I think the company has a lot of potential, and I'm thinking about picking up more. Wondering what you think about it here. It's a good time to add to it, or if I should hold off or maybe get rid of it entirely. Just wondering what you think. Always value your advice and your knowledge, and appreciate all you do for us. I'll listen on the podcast. Thank you.
So Visteon Corp is an automotive products company. And if I had to guess, before I even look, they did some pretty significant revenue growth during the pandemic. Makes sense. Things were really expensive, especially within the auto parts space. And the revenue growth over the past 5 years has been kind of modest, about 5.8%. And as was noted, it's in a bearish trend. It is certainly in a bearish trend. If you look over the past 2 years at this chart, that is a consistent downward trend, finding lower lows and lower highs. So the question becomes, is now the time to invest? Well, from a cash flow perspective, it actually looks pretty decent. Over the past year, they have been improving in terms of their operating cash flow. Their margins are increasing. They only got $445 million in debt on a $3 billion market cap company. And it seems to be a consistent business. It's trading at 2.9 in terms of book value. Its price to earnings is an 11. Here's my thing. From what I know about this business, it seems to be a pretty well-run business. It's not overly levered. They've been buying back shares. They've had some earnings upgrades. They had an outsized 2022 and 2023. They came back down to earth in 2024, but their earnings upgrades are improving. But this is a down momentum name right now. Until you see some support that actually holds, I'm not telling you to sell. I don't think this is a sell name. I don't even think it's a hold name. I think it is a buy name. But until you see some support hold and this trend start to reverse, there's no point in catching a falling knife. Thanks for the call. Now it's Friday, which means we have just finished the KPP Premium newsletter, and it will be distributed to subscribers tomorrow morning. But I have a special preview for you all today. In the market conditions section, we explained that in a recent trading session, U.S. stock indices have shown divergent trends, with traditional industrial and financial sectors demonstrating signs of stress. The Dow Jones and S&P 500 are on the brink of ending their weekly positive streak, though we do know that the S&P barely eked it out, primarily due to persistent inflation concerns that have cooled investor enthusiasm for riskier assets. The shift in investor sentiment starkly contrasts with the performance of the NASDAQ, which remains robust, driven by the strong performance of the technology sector. On the bond front, apprehensions are mounting over the U.S. government's increasing debt issuances, especially as the presidential election draws near. The lack of political commitment to deficit reduction is expected to continue exerting upward pressure on Treasury yields, which will in turn complicate the Federal Reserve's interest rate strategy. This situation is prompting investors to gravitate towards shorter-term maturities, a strategic shift aimed at mitigating exposure to potential long-term fiscal instability. The anticipation of these challenges reflects a broader strategic realignment in portfolio management amid these growing fiscal uncertainties. Looking ahead, the global economic landscape is poised for significant shifts with important data releases on the horizon. The U.S. will soon detail its PCE inflation figures, closely watched by the Federal Reserve as it contemplates the next steps in monetary policy. Additionally, forthcoming GDP data from Canada and India will provide vital signs into the health of the global economy. There's a lot more commentary detail in the newsletter, where we also have a stock ideas section, where this week we highlighted a global security products company with a portfolio of leading brands. The convergence of electronic and mechanical security products and increased infrastructure spending should drive sales growth and margin expansion opportunities going forward. The stock currently trades at an 18 price to earnings with its most recent pullback. It should start to find support based on its 200-day moving average in the low 120 range. We also looked at a pure play automation competitor. As of fiscal 2021, the firm operates through three segments: intelligent devices, software and control, and lifecycle services. Its price to earnings is on the higher range, 23, but if you believe in the growth of automation, it may be low. The company has a very strong balance sheet with high cash flows. As always, we name names in the newsletter. I've given you a sample teaser of the latest KPP Premium newsletter. Subscribers receive the full edition via email each Saturday, and they also get the portfolios and consumer watch sections. So learn more and subscribe anytime at investtalk.com. Now let's shift gears and talk about an important development, not just within the US, but globally, and that is a shift towards T+1 settlement is what we call it, which is next day settlement. So these big changes are coming to US markets next Tuesday, which is the next trading day of the year. Remember, Monday we have off. And this follows a new rule that was adopted by the SEC. The settlement time for US equities, corporate municipal bonds, and other securities will be reduced to just one day. Again, we call that T+1, which speeds up the process of trade settlement significantly. So what exactly is settlement? Well, it's the final stage of a trade where the buyer receives the security and the seller is paid. All of this handled by the Depository Trust Company, or DTC. And so this change aims to reduce risk and improve efficiency in the world's largest market. With the current two-day delay, there have been hiccups before, but speeding things up means investors will recover their money and securities sooner. The push for faster settlement isn't just a regulatory whim. It was partially motivated by, of all things, the GameStop frenzy in 2021. As that highlighted the need to reduce what we call counterparty risk, which is the risk that the person you're transacting with can't deliver the securities or can't deliver the cash. And not only do that, but enhance capital efficiency and liquidity overall in security transactions. And so market participants, banks, asset managers, even retail investors are gearing up for this shift, and they've been testing faster settlement since last August. This weekend, the DTC, who plays a crucial role, will have a virtual command center set up to monitor the process and handle any issues that might arise. It's worth noting the US isn't the first to move to T+1. India and China are already there. India is looking to shift to same-day settlement soon, which means you transact on the same day you're trading, or rather you settle on the same day you're trading. Following the US's lead, Canada and Mexico and Argentina will also switch to one-day settlement the day before the US does, as they don't have Monday off. But what about the challenges and pitfalls? Financial firms, as you may understand, if you're going from 2 days to one day, are going to have less time to arrange funds to buy stocks or even recall shares on loan or rectify transaction errors. And this could increase the risk of settlement failures and transaction costs, just as it did when they switched from T+3 to T+2 a few years back. What's another complication? Well, if you're transacting in a foreign market, you're a US investor, you're buying Indian security, you're buying something in Europe, or rather if you're an international investor that's buying in the US, the foreign exchange markets still trade and settle in 2 days generally, sometimes in 3 days in the instances of some countries like India. And so that adds another layer of complexity in the process because you have mismatched trading and settlement cycles between different types of securities. And so there are also concerns about what could go wrong. Like I said before, there was an increase in trade fails the last time that we transitioned from T+3 to T+2. Hopefully in the wake of that, any issues will be resolved more quickly this time around. Overall, I think that this is a good change. When you increase liquidity, when you increase market efficiency, when you reduce overall risks, like reducing counterparty risk, it's better for markets as a whole. It's better for market participants. It's better for institutions. It's better for you and me. Let's see if we can get one more question in before we head into a break. And this question came from our YouTube channel from John in Oregon, who is looking to get into pharmaceuticals and into healthcare and is curious about United Healthcare, ticker UNH. He's curious what price would be a good price to get into UNH. Well, I don't think I need to tell anybody about United Healthcare. United Healthcare is a massive, massive company. And not only is it a massive company, and we'll talk a little bit more about this massive company, it is doing something that companies that you should be excited about their dividends do. And that is, it has a 14-year streak of raising its dividends. So we'll talk a little bit more about UNH when we get back, if I think it's a good company to invest in and what would be a good price. But as we head into that break, I want to remind you that we are preparing a new InvestTalk Wealth webinar hosted by myself and Justin, where we will be talking about dividends. The title of this webinar is Quality Investing, Digging Deeper Than Dividends. You guys know I like alliteration. It all happens online Tuesday, June 11th from 1 to 2 p.m. Pacific. So go to investtalk.com now and register for our upcoming wealth webinar. As all webinars are from us, it is free, but you must pre-register. And now, before we head into the weekend, if you want to get your call in, do it now. My phone lines are open at 888-99-CHART.
This is InvestTalk. Luke Guerrero is here, taking your calls live. 888-99-CHART.
Now, before we headed into the break, we were talking about United Healthcare Group, UNH, one of the world's largest health insurers. And I mentioned that it has exactly the characteristics of a dividend payer that you want, and that is a long streak of raising their dividend. And so coming on the back of strong performance in 2023, once again, this company reiterated, we want to continue to raise our dividend. And so all four quarters of 2023, this is important to note, actually beat analyst estimates. Great. And so what's hindering this company is what is hindering a lot of health insurers, and that is medical expenses. So there's a 16% increase for United Healthcare, primarily just like CVS from the Medicare Advantage segment. So let's take a look at it fundamentally. In terms of debt, it's got modest debt levels, especially compared to its peers, $67 billion on a $475 billion market cap company. Its cash flow, it took a little bit of a drop off, but again, with the increased medical expenses, we expect that. Its profitability, again, took a drop off as well. But given its debt levels, given its consistent dividend history in the 1.3 to 1.5% range, given, again, that it beat analyst estimates the previous four quarters, and it has held up pretty well relative to some insurers within the industry. And not only that, given its recent pullback, it's only trading at a 17 times price to earnings. I think this is a good company. I think it may come down a little bit more. I think it's a good buy to have. Let's take a look at the chart real quick. I mean, it's been kind of all over the place for the past couple months. I mean, earnings to be expected. But I think, honestly, anywhere in the 500 range, slightly below 500, maybe in the 490 to 500 range, it's a good place to pick this up. I think it's a good company. Like I said, I think it has a good history. And yeah, I like it. Overall, I like it. Thanks for watching and leaving us a comment. We do love those YouTube comments. And like I said, we try to get to those as soon as we possibly can. Now, we're just about ready to start the holiday weekend. But first, I want to answer one more question that came into our voice bank.
Hi, my name is Neil from Chicago. I love your show and really appreciate what you do for all of us. I had a question about the company Etsy. E-T-S-Y, one of the pandemic favorites. It went really up during the pandemic, and then since then it's been down. I own some. I'm looking for some recommendation whether to hold them or cut my losses and get out of it. Thank you again. We'll look forward to the question being here on the show. Bye.
So E-T-S-Y, great ticker because that's also the name of the company, Etsy, is a online platform where buyers can buy niche products from creators. And so as you'd expect, this company really flourished during the pandemic. Why did it flourish during the pandemic? Well, people had a lot of income. They weren't traveling. They had a lot of money to spend on these niche products. And secondarily, the creators had a lot of free time. And so that really hasn't been the case more recently. Sales volumes have been essentially flat for the past 2 years. You see this huge growth in 2019, 2020, 2021, but then nothing. Even this year, it's projected to grow slightly, $50 million. The company's profitable, which is good. You don't see that in a lot of companies. You know, it wasn't profitable in 2022, but generally speaking, it's been profitable over the past 4 years. And so I think there are some good reasons why this company is performing the way it is. Again, predominantly the demand isn't where it was, but also the supply isn't where it was. people have to leave their houses, people have to go back to work. And a lot of the online retail is now being focused on companies that did not do well during the pandemic. Amazon, Walmart have expanded their e-commerce section. So I think this was one of those things where it was a flash in the pan. Unlike other pandemic names that flourished, this one actually made money, which is fantastic. Unlike Peloton, again, slapping an iPad on an exercise bike, that was never a good idea. Could it stabilize? Maybe. But sometimes you just need to cut your losses and realize you have a finite amount of capital and you're paying an opportunity cost by holding a name like Etsy in your portfolio. Thanks for the call. I'm Luke Guerrero, and this completes another episode of Invest Talk. We thank you for listening, and we encourage you to tell your friends and family members about our free podcast downloads. Get yours anytime at iTunes, Google Play, and Spotify. I hope that you heard by now that in the Invest Talk podcast is also available in video form on our YouTube channel. Just search Invest Talk, and don't forget Invest Talk has two T's. Independent thinking, shared success. This is Invest Talk. Good night.
InvestTalk is a trademark of KPP Financial. Because of the nature of the interactive dialogue inherent in the format of this program, it's important for the listener to understand that not all comments made will apply to them. Specifically, nothing said shall be taken to be investment advice, or shall statements on this program be considered an offer to buy or sell security. Because such advice is rendered solely on an individual basis and at times will require that the investor review a prospectus before investing. InvestTalk is a copyrighted program of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, a registered investment advisor firm, which retains all rights. For more information regarding KPP's investment advisors, call 1-800-557-5461. Steve Peasley is president, and Justin Klein is chief executive officer of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial. Thank you for listening, and your comments and questions are welcome on our 24-hour listener line at 888-99-CHART.